Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. You're welcome again to another edition of The Game on Sunday, the podcast, of course. Mike Investor here with you, and we have Ross Mulcahy with us as well. Now, if you listened to the last podcast that we had Cora Stolton on, legend of Mayo football, and we had a great chat with her, which I really enjoyed. I'm delighted that this week we have another legend of GEA, and I hope I'm not going to embarrass him because he's listening on the other end here. About all that kind of stuff, but I mean, like, his record down through the years is just enormous. I'll tell you about that in a moment. First of all, let me say we are delighted to be joined by Kilkenny's Richie Hogan. Richie, how is the form?
The form is very good, Michael. Delighted to be here, and a little bit more time now than I used to, which is always nice.
Of course, yeah. I was just looking at your CV a little bit earlier on. Like myself, I know you're from Kilkenny, you know I'm from Galway, but the two of us were actually born in Waterford.
Oh, I don't know where you've gotten this CV from, because I was born nowhere near Waterford.
Well, it says it up here. I'm looking at it. You can look it up yourself. Born in Waterford in 1988.
Wow.
Yeah, I got the same as well, Richie. I was going to throw it into you. Why aren't you playing with the day shift? Was it just the Waterford Hospital and you moved back over the border? You were living in Waterford, and somebody went down there and they handpicked you to bring you back up for the Black and Amber.
God, no. I was born in Kilkenny Hospital, right in the middle of Kilkenny City, and at the time my parents were living just on the border between Bennett's Bridge and Dainsfort. We were there for a couple of years. We were there for, I think, around 17 years. And my father is from a place called Callan in Kilkenny, which would be right beside the Tipperary border. So if there's hatred, it's not for Waterford. It's certainly for Tipperary.
I know. Yeah. I suppose that's as good a reminder as any to everybody out there. Don't believe everything you see up on the internet, because most of it is not true. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So Richie, you recently announced your retirement, which obviously, after all those years and all those successes, if you like, that was obviously a big thing.
Ah, it was, yeah. It's nice, to be honest. It's not really much of a secret that, it certainly wouldn't have come as much of a surprise to a lot of people. That's for sure. I've been involved with the Kilkenny team for 17 seasons. came on initially when I was 18 and leaving now at the age of 35, which is nice. And the last couple of years were obviously a struggle. And it was pretty obvious that I probably couldn't get much more out of it. I wouldn't say I'm happy because I'm not, but I'm pretty content that I probably couldn't do a whole lot more, and I probably squeezed a few more years out of it than my body probably would have liked.
Sure, yeah. I often think back to Joe Kenny when he won the All-Ireland a couple of years ago, 2017, wasn't it? And, you know, I used to talk to people in Galway, and they used to say like things like, Jesus, would Joe Canning ever win an All-Ireland? And it looked like he wouldn't. And then it happened. And if you know, you were on the other side of that fence, if you like, Richie, in the sense that success came early to you and it came often.
Yeah, literally the exact opposite of the Joe Canning story, in a sense that, like I had an All-Ireland medal before I had even played. You know, and that can be, you know, and that's, you know, that's nice in a way. But certainly I came into a group that was certainly at the time regarded as one of the greatest teams of all time. And they were right at the pinnacle of their powers. So presented different challenges. Well, I wasn't really worried about would I win an All-Ireland or not. I was actually more worried about, will I get onto the team? Will I make an impact? Will I push someone else out? And while that was a brilliant place to be, it is still difficult as a young player to come in. Because like I was 18, you know, I wasn't, if you're coming in and you're 21 and let's say you're strong and you have a few years of under 21 experience underneath you and, you know, a couple of years at senior club level, you can break in a little bit easier. But my path was a little bit sooner and obviously a little bit challenging.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In actual fact, you talked about being 18, but I think it's fair to say, Richie, you were on the radar with Kilkenny long before that.
Yeah. And looking back on it, it's nice. Like I remember even as a kid, being involved in teams. I was always kind of one of the youngest on the teams that I was playing in. I played my first minor game with Kilkenny in a challenge when I was 14. I was in third year in school, and we played a challenge match. Kieran's College played the Kilkenny minors in a challenge game in a kind of it was a warm up to a college's All-Ireland final that was on that time, and I played a game for them that year. Didn't make the panel that year, but then made it the following year when I was 15 and going on 16, if you like. So I had a great time as an underage player. I played 3 years minor. I played 4 years under 21 with Kilkenny. Being as part of those, and they weren't just Kilkenny teams, they were successful Kilkenny teams. You know, they were littered with lads who would go on to be kind of future stars. So that was a brilliant learning curve for me, for sure. And I think I improved a huge amount from that, because I was always playing with and training against players who at the time were bigger, stronger, and better than me. So, you know, I was bound to come up a couple of levels from that, and I thought that was hugely helpful.
I read a comment by a namesake of yours, Brian Hogan, who said, you were a nightmare to Mark. He was talking about club, obviously, and Kilkenny and that kind of stuff. And he actually said, I was just delighted, he said, he played with you more times than he played against you.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's nice. And funny enough, as the amount of times myself and Brian get mistaken for brothers, which is ridiculous, considering I think he's six foot five.
As against Richie, 5'7".
It depends on how bad or how well I'm hurling. I grow another inch. But look, myself and Brian. Sure, I would have marked Brian at club level a lot, and would have marked him in training a lot because, I would have played at that centre forward midfield kind of triangle area, and he would have been a centre back. And but for me, going up against a guy like Brian Hogan or someone of his stature or his size or his power or physicality, you know, I was never going to do what suited Brian. You know, I was always going to try different ways of getting past him, different ways of getting my hands on the ball, different ways of playing. And different ways of competing. And the one thing about being 5'7" or 5'7½ is the one thing about being that size is you don't really come up against players that are smaller than you that much. So everybody is bigger than you, so you nearly have the same approach, especially at that particular time when the ball was constantly coming high and you had to win it. So, you know, you have the great advantage of being quicker off the mark and quicker to the ball once it hits the ground, but then you can work on your own technique in the air in terms of winning that ball, and it doesn't need to change that much because everybody is bigger than you. It's just, you know, there's no real difference between 6'2 and 6'5 when the ball is coming in the air and you have to jump and, you know, try and get your timing right. So myself and Brian, great challenges over the years, and he was a fantastic leader on our team.
I was just going to bring in to Moss because I'm sure you have a question to ask.
It's just when he hit that point there, Richie, in terms of your size and your stature, and look, being on the Sunday game for so many years with you, Mike, and the stuff like that, like one of the big topics that we always praised was the ball winning ability of Kilkenny, right? And look, Shefflin, Brian Hogan, as you mentioned, whatever, and Eddie Brennan, big boys, were late to catch the ball after the year. But there was two guys that stood out, Tommy Walsh and Richie Hogan. Richie, is it natural instinct in terms that you put your hand up inside the middle guys that you mentioned there are bigger than you, they're stronger than you, they're taller than you, but you still managed to poke serious or catch serious ball out of the air? I mean, it was fantastic to watch. Is that something you practice, or did that come just natural to you?
Yeah, it comes back to what I mentioned earlier about constantly playing on teams where, let's say, I was 15 or 16, and the other guys were 18, and reverse that back even a little bit to when I was 12 and other guys were 14 and 15. I wasn't small for my age. There was plenty of guys who were smaller than me. I was average height for my age. So I would have always, catching the ball, I would have always been a target man at my own age group. I would have played in that half forward line and would have practiced winning puck outs and competing there. But then obviously playing on older age groups, I had to do something different because you have to win the ball against bigger guys.
Yeah.
That helped me a lot when I came up against bigger players at inter-county level when I stopped growing and they continued. it just allowed me to be able to adapt a little bit. And to be honest, Tomas, myself, you picked up myself and Tommy Welch, who are similar height. And
yeah.
There's loads more in Kilkenny who probably had the same ability and had the same level of hurling, but weren't able to do that, and that's why they didn't make it. And you know, it was very much necessity. You know, if I wasn't able to win the ball in the air, if I wasn't able to bring that to my game, I wouldn't be there. And so it was really just a necessity, more so than anything else. And of course, we practiced it, and of course, we worked on it. Not really as a group, but individually, you would be constantly trying to find new ways of winning that ball in the air, for sure.
I mean, once you got a ball in your hand, you knew then, right, you were in a much stronger position, whether you're playing centre forward or you're playing at full forward, you're maybe 15, 20 yards from goal at full forward. So you had a massive advantage in terms of getting the ball into your hand first.
Yeah, and like that is the key, you know. Like you practice as a kid, you practice for years and years and years with the ball in your hand, and you know, then when you get a little bit older, the key is to actually get your hands on it, you know, because you've practiced so much as a kid and all that natural ability and you know, training that you did as a kid allows you to be able to do something with the ball, and then the challenge is to get your hands on it. And I always found that I had a huge natural advantage against other players, especially around the middle third, because I was faster over the first 10 or 20 meters. I wouldn't be getting the ball in the middle of the field and taking off on an 80 meter solo run because I'd be caught very easily. But certainly over 15 or 20 meters, I knew I could get to the ball first and I could win it. So the key for me then was I either need to get the ball onto the ground where I can win it and get onto that break, or else if I'm going up against a guy who's bigger and stronger, I just need to time my run right. I need to position myself right. I need to either come in from behind where he can't see me, or I just need to move into an area where the ball is not going to come high. Because, you know, if you're free and you're all on your own, nobody's going to drive the ball down the middle to your man. So, you know, thinking about the way I could play the game and play it on my terms was a huge thing, and a huge thing for other players, certainly, but certainly something I put a lot of emphasis on.
Isn't it always, I suppose, Richie, isn't it always a case on any team, in any sport, about getting the balance right? You know, you need the tricky guys, the skillful guys like yourself. You need the big physical guys as well. I remember I'm old enough, Richie, to go back to the late 50s, and I saw in Galway in football the legends that were Frank Stockmull and Sean Purcell play. And the whole point about it was Sean Purcell was a huge, big, burly guy who played out around the half forward line. And Frankie Stockmull was a small, wiry guy who played inside him. But the point about it is Purcell used to win the ball and feed Stockmull. And it used to simply destroy opposition teams. Isn't it about balance?
It absolutely is. You know, it absolutely is. Like, and I would, you know, if you think about even the teams playing today and the teams over the last 10 or 15 years, you'd always see a fella, especially in the forwards, whose job it was to, let's say, do the majority of the hooking and the blocking and the chasing and the tackling and the hassling and the harrying, and he mightn't get any score. And that's brilliant and hugely valuable to a team, but you can't have six of those guys out
there. Yeah,
because it's not going to work. And similarly, you'll see a lot of teams, certainly in the modern era, where they just pick the six best individual forwards and they stick them in there, and you know, all of a sudden you have nobody who's going to win a ball, all of a sudden you have nobody who's going to run down through the middle with a bit of pace, or nobody who's going to you know, send the opposition backwards with their tackling. But you absolutely need the right balance within the team. Like, every player needs a certain amount of everything, or else they're not going to make it. But in reality, you pick players for what they can do and not necessarily for what they can't do. And you need to get that balance right, for sure.
That's 100% true. Can I ask you a question, Richie? Just in terms of the teams that you were on, it was a very successful time, obviously, for Kilkenny, and some fabulous players came through at that time. And that's always a big factor in any sport, I suppose. How much do you think, realistically,
Brian Cody was responsible for putting all that together.
Oh, well, I wouldn't. He certainly wasn't responsible for all of it, because we would have been cited as a really well-run county, not just a really good manager. And I think it was really important to get all of that right. So certainly behind the scenes, Ned Quinn and his county board were a huge influence in terms of setting up those underage structures, right down from the school element of it. I think it was Paul Kinsler who was mainly in charge of that. There were some really brilliant guys at underage level from the 90s and the 2000s. And that, like the development squad era kind of started around that time within Kilkenny and was hugely successful. And we had some brilliant underage managers and coaches who were feeding a conveyor belt of players up to that particular senior team. And then at the top, I think Brian was definitely the perfect man at the time for that particular group, because the players were more talented than everybody else and they were better players than everybody else. And I think he was very good at keeping people, I wouldn't say motivated, but keeping people grounded and keeping people focused on...
on their toes, yeah.
Exactly, on achieving everything you could achieve at that particular time and not, you know, having one or two good seasons. It was always an element of constantly being greedy, constantly trying to win everything. There was no such thing as an attitude of, let's say, that a league match isn't important, or that you know, we didn't win every league, but Jesus, we tried to win every single one of them. And that would have always been a really that would always been a really consistent thing with Brian right throughout. Was he demanded that we approached every game the best we possibly could in terms of attitude and in terms of our work rate and in terms of our application. He understood that during the league matches that you might have trained really, really hard on a Wednesday and a Thursday, and maybe your hurling mightn't be fully up to scratch where it would have been later on in the championship. But as a player togging out that Sunday or that Saturday evening, he demanded everything that you had at that point in time. And that would have been very, very evident. And I think that was the perfect, that combination of Ned, Paul Kinsler and others around that time, the underage structures, along with Brian then at that senior level. I think that was definitely the perfect combination.
Yeah, could I just ask you on that, Richie, right? I mean, that's a fascinating trace, right, in terms of your county board and Ned and Paul Kinsley, and I'd know them, and unbelievable people, brilliant people, the foresight and innovation and bringing back former players to see what they can do in schools and where they can help out. Can I ask you about St. Kieran's College? Is it as strong as ever there? Is hurling still...
Yes.
The number one is still the number one choice there. Do you still see guys going to school with the Harley and the bag over the shoulder?
Yeah, it's stronger, Tomás, than it ever was, I think. I don't know how many All-Irelands they've won in the last kind of 10 or 15 years, but it's been a lot. Certainly when I went to school in Kieran's College, yes, it was known for hurling, but you wouldn't really have kids going to Kieran's to play hurling. It wasn't really a thing, and the whole thing of people bringing hurls to school, that was very much a first year and a kind of a until you were far more interested in actually going downtown and having your lunch rather than staying around. That was very much a first.
I've got
Robin
Harna for a bag, is it?
Oh, well, I certainly wasn't, that's for sure. But that was very much a young, once people got to 14 or 15, that wasn't really a thing. But now, most fourth, fifth, and sixth years, if they have any interest in hurling at all, are probably bringing their hurl to school and poking around and tipping away. It's not as if they're out playing a match every day at 1 o'clock for lunch, but they are probably poking around and keeping themselves going. And the school is getting bigger, as far as I know. They're looking at, I think they're looking at extending the size of the school. And the county board and themselves, I think, had some form of a partnership about about maybe 15 years ago, just after I left, where they developed the pitches for them. And so it now really is a real center of excellence, if you like. Whereas when I was there, like, we didn't really have a proper full-size pitch. We played our matches in James Stevens' local field and stuff like that. But I would say the teachers, from a teaching perspective, the teachers when I was there were top class in terms of their coaching abilities. That really made the difference. Like, we took the under 14, there was three levels, I think, under 14, under 16, and under 19. And
under 19, yes. Yeah.
We took those so serious. You know, that was, and if you think about it at the time, it's your first taste as a young fella of playing teams outside your county.
Yes.
Like at that time. And that's why we took it really serious. Like, to win a Leinster championship, there was no All-Ireland at under 14 level or under 16 level when I was there. But to win a Leinster championship was a huge deal when we were there. And the teachers there were outstanding in terms of coaching. And that has gotten even better. You know, there's former players now in there who are coaches. That's going to keep getting stronger. Whether it'll have an effect on the Kilkenny team or not, I don't know.
But that's an interesting point, Moss, that you raised there, because, Richie, I live in South County Dublin, in Cabinteely.
Yeah.
And when I started to live out there for us many, many years ago, you would not see a Gaelic player from one end of the parish to the other. But now at weekends, if I'm driving up to the village to get the paper or, you know, pint of milk or whatever the case is, the number of teams that are out playing, mostly Hurling, actually, Richie, football as well, by the way, it's just extraordinary. I mean, and in fairness to them, there was a lot of facilities in Cabinteely. There's a lot of public pitches and all that kind of stuff. But I've seen a dramatic change over the last number of years in the number of people, Tomás, who are now interested in playing Gaelic games.
It's huge, Michael, And that was my point to Richie, right? I mean, because everybody has heard of traditional schools around the country in terms of, look, with rugby or Gaelic games, and did they hold their stature, right? But like St. Kieran's College, Kilkenny was talked about the length and breadth of the country in terms of what it produced, the underage, the school teachers, and obviously foremost in front there is education. You go to school for your education and you balance it with your hurling. But I was interested to hear from that, like, I mean, the development with the board and the pitches and the partnership and stuff like that, right? I mean, that's phenomenal to hear. And that's probably a concern for us all, that the school is getting bigger and there's extensions going on there. Because we thought you might be down for a while.
I think the school's championship now is not as relevant as it used to be. Because certainly in Kilkenny, both Kieran's College, the Kilkenny CBS, Castle Comer Community School, and Good Counsel, which is in New Ross, but will be filled with maybe half Kilkenny guys, half Wexford guys. They're extremely strong, those four schools. Castle Comer's is smaller and you know, won't always be as strong as the other two, but it used to be far more competitive when I was like Burr was a really strong school. Now I think Offaly put in a college's team themselves. So it used to be St. Peter's College used to be really strong when I was playing as well. They may well be strong now again, but certainly I know they faded for a while and others. But like Kieran's is a different kettle of fish altogether. I remember some fella, I think they were picking like a St. Kieran's all-time kind of great team. And I think the full forward line was Owen Kelly, DJ Carey and Nicky Rackard. So like, you know, that's,
Did you make it, Richie?
I think this was pre my time.
Right.
Good answer. I think that, you know, and that's not even including Eddie Kerr and Henry Shefflin, you know. That's what you're talking about in terms of the standard. But Kenny's a small county. It's a small county, you know, so like it's not like Cork, where people will go to their locality. Like if you want to play hurling and you want to go to Kieran's College, it's no more than 15 miles away from anywhere in Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Richie,
Can I just bring you back to your own career and your own time? And obviously, there have been so many highlights, including seven All-Irelands, by the way. And that, would you think 2014 was a highlight for you? Like All-Ireland, All-Star, Player of the Year, etc.
Yeah. No, it really was. We won everything, I think, in 2014. We won the pre-season tournament, the Welsh Cup. We won the National League final. We won the Leinster Championship. We won the All-Ireland. We won every single thing that was available that year, which was a massive for us. And we won none of them easily. We won the league final and we won the league final after extra time, and we won the All-Ireland final after a replay. And for me, it was huge, because we had kind of rebuilt slightly another team, if you like. And I know a lot was made of the likes of Tommy Welch and Henry Sheff. I know it was kind of their last years, but the two boys were subs for the year. You know, it was a new rejuvenated team with younger guys coming through, and that was definitely one of the greatest years I've had, for sure. And something new for me. I'd played out in the middle of the field, whereas I had played as a forward prior to that. But just in terms of overall enjoyment and the amount of games we played, I think we played seven or eight championship games that year, which was a strange thing too for us. You know, we played four games in Leinster. So that was brilliant. Just that whole campaign was amazing, because we weren't really favourites to win the thing at the start, and then to win it, and in such dramatic fashion, you know, with the Bubbles Dwyer free at the end of the drawn game, and you know, all of that. Like it was amazing stuff.
And if you're also, I forgot to mention, you were also man of the match, by the way, in that
My God, that's an incredible achievement, Michael. Yeah, and if I just follow on to that, Richie, just in terms of your rivals, who did you hate the most, or who were your biggest rivals? Maybe in terms of rank, it's like the toughest. Is it Tipperary because of 2010 and because of the history being close to him? And
I would definitely take the word hate out of it, because I don't know that we hate anybody really. And the difference with us and other teams is we were almost always the team on top, so it was more case of other teams hating us than anything else. Because I definitely knew
we did hate you at times. All right.
And I know when I came in first, teams were talking about Cork, not from a point of hatred, but they really didn't want to give them an inch. They would have hated to see Cork win an All-Ireland around that time at the expense of ourselves, because they had won like two or three prior to that and had beaten us in finals. So I know definitely at the start, the talk would have been about Cork and very little about Tipperary. And then very quickly, when Liam Sheedy came in and started competing, it became very much about Tipperary, because there would be huge rivalry between Kilkenny and Tipperary from a traditional point of view, going back 40, 50 years. But it never really translated for us, because we didn't play each other much, and Tipperary weren't particularly strong for 10 years prior to Liam Sheedy. And then, you know, in recent years, then of course it's been Limerick. You know, there was a bit of a mix in the middle of Waterford were quite strong and Clare were relatively strong, but it was very much the Corks, the Tipperaries and Limerick, obviously, in recent years.
Actually, Tomás, and what you asked Richie there a second ago about the rivalries and all that kind of stuff, I remember back in the day, and going back to the late 80s here, when the football championship, the All-Ireland Football Championship, was a knockout event. And in Munster, it was usually a Kerry and Cork Munster football final.
Yes.
And I remember talking to one of the Kerry players one day, socially, and I said to him, do you ever get fed up with these Munster finals, always against the same opposition and always coming up against Cork and usually Kerry Betham? And he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, Bosco, you never get fed up beating Cork.
All right. So, yeah,
anyway, Richie, can I come back, because time is moving on, but I want to ask you about one thing. You've had a lot of great moments in your life. I want to ask you about this, because this was the 2019 All-Ireland Final, and you got sent off in this. And the reason that I'm asking you about this is because I was now retired from the Sunday game, so I was actually sitting in the Hogan stand, and I was sitting right in front of you guys. When I say right in front of you guys, I mean you and Colin Barrett, and you got into a tussle, and you got sent off by James Owens. And I was wondering what you thought about all that, because I remember looking at James Owens, and I could see somebody was talking to him in his ear. And when I say I could see it, I don't know, but I mean, that's the way it looked to me. The impression that I got was he didn't want to send you off. But how did you feel about it?
God, I felt awful about it, to be honest.
Of course.
It was kind of one of those unfortunate situations that you kind of get yourself caught in, because, like, and I completely accept that when you make contact with somebody from, you know, and it's high up around the, you know, the top of the shoulder, the neck, the head, that you're running the risk of being in trouble. And I completely accept that. But at the time, it's like it was one of those challenges where it probably happened six times already in the game, and it, you know, probably be another four or five where it's a physical game. Like where the way I was looking at it was like Kyle Barrett had the ball in his hand, and he was about to run down the line. Now he saw me coming and put the brakes on big time to avoid the shoulder. And I missed the shoulder and connected with his helmet. And that's kind of, but, you know, you often look at if a fella is running through with the ball and a fella goes out and pole axes him, and he knows exactly what he's doing. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to foul. And I wasn't even trying to foul him. I was trying to shoulder him over the line. So even though, like, everybody in the stadium knows what I was trying to do, I was trying to shoulder him out over the line. But if it's a fraction off, then you're running that risk. And like, I lads were telling me about, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. But like, if you look at, if you were to name the most famous shoulder of the last 10, 15 years, you'd probably say, remember that shoulder of Pádraig Maher on Joe Cannon?
Yeah, incredible.
A brilliant shoulder and a fair shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Now, both of those players left the field with blood injuries to their face. So both of their heads clashed. Now, he wasn't going for a diving headbutt, but when you hit a fella's shoulder and you follow through and heads clash, now nobody would have said that was a free, let alone anything else, and it wasn't. But it's when you miss the tackle and contact is made, then you're running the risk. But I don't know. The one thing about referees, Michael, that you probably don't get from watching the game is a lot of referees are different. James Owens doesn't speak to the players, certainly my experience is he would have been one of the referees who would never really speak to the players much. It's just he makes his decision, wouldn't entertain any conversation, wouldn't explain anything. So I actually don't know. He just came over and, God, I can't even remember what he said. I think he just said high tackle or something along the lines of high tackle, red card. Now, he might have said something else, but when he said high tackle, I just assumed he was going to give out a yellow card, and I was kind of half walking off. So it was more of a shock. Oh, look, it was horrible, to be honest, because it had... And now, I'm not the first player to be sent off in an All-Ireland final. Loads of people have been sent off in finals, but it was probably one of the ones that was the most controversial and had the biggest impact on a game. And I think it was... Like, there certainly hasn't been a sending off that has been as high profile, you know?
Sure.
I agree with you there, Richie. And look, I mean, yeah, and I think the modern game, timing is huge now in terms of the tackle and the high tackle. In the past, probably you'd have got away with that, and it was just a mistiming and an unfortunate incident. And I can see what you were saying in terms of
You've seen Barrett with the ball in his hand. He's on the sideline. It's something that I would have had in my mind as well. That was drilled into me. If there's an opportunity to get him over the line, do what you can to get him out there. But when you look back in it, do you think yourself it was the right card?
No, and I still don't, genuinely, because first of all, like, the contact wasn't heavy. Like, you can kind of see in the video that it's actually, and we've all seen, I don't know if you wore a helmet much, Tomas, you probably didn't.
No, there was not. No,
yeah, but you'll often see when a fella goes into a tackle, and next thing you see in the helmet is kind of shoved up over his chin and it moves. So, like, that's actually, that happens all the time where the helmet rubs off the player. It wasn't heavy contact at all. And, like, in reality, if a yellow card had been handed out, they wouldn't have even spoken about it on the Sunday game afterwards. You know, they wouldn't have made an issue of it. But from a technical point of view, sure, a technical point of view, of course, by the rule book, it can be a sending off. And look, lads are saying to me, you haven't seen one since. You know, all of the rest of them since have all been given as yellows. And
I've seen more tackles, Richie, and no card even.
But sure, that's the funny part. So, like, there hasn't been a Monday or a Tuesday that I've either come into work or been out and about where there's been maybe a head high challenge at the weekend that was given as a yellow, and someone says, oh, remember why didn't they do this every year? Like, so the amount of times that someone gets away with a high challenge now, I'm always the first person to be brought up. So I keep getting reminded of it, but I've gotten over that a long time ago, and I just look back and smile at it, really. Certainly move on from it for pretty quickly. Yeah.
Final question for you, Richie, before I let you guys go. How long do you think it will take for your wife to start trying to throw you out of the house? And the reason that I'm asking you this, I was talking to a good friend of mine years ago. He was in management, by the way, retired from management. And a couple of weeks later, or a couple of months later, his wife said to him, Sean, is there not some match you could go to?
Yeah. Oh, God. It won't take long, because I won't be in the house much, that's for sure. So she won't need to tell me. I'll get the message pretty quickly.
You'll go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's the GAA and hurling in particular was certainly part of my life for 15, 20 years, well, even more, since I was a kid.
Since you were a kid.
Yeah, of course. And while I certainly don't plan on doing any coaching or any managing or anything like that, certainly not anytime soon. I will absolutely find loads of stuff to do after work, that's for sure, and make use of time. And I'm actually enjoying one of the things that I'm looking forward to most is choosing when I exercise and choosing what I do.
Yes.
And
yes.
choosing whether I do it or not. You know, like, yeah. if I want to go for a run, if I don't want to do it, and just exercising for enjoyment, possibly, or, you know, rather than trying to always constantly find something mentally when you're training. Yeah. I think that I'm looking forward to that, to see how I get on. I don't know how well it'll go for me, but I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Michael, I just have one last question from there. Sorry,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Richie, outside of hurling, what floats your boat in terms of other sports, in terms of, like we say, any guys, they know nothing else but hurling. Is there anything else? Are you a soccer fan? Do you watch the rugby? Or
I would watch them all, yeah, for sure. I never played rugby. I played a lot of soccer when I was a kid, and I played handball when I was a kid. I don't think I'll go back to either of those sports. I will probably do some running possibly, and some cycling. I have a lot of kind of legacy back issues and stuff,
yes,
like that.
Back issues,
so anything more dynamic than running, swimming, cycling, you know, like, it would be a bit much for me. I'll play a bit of golf, but I love watching all sports. But outside of that, I you know, I just, you know, I like education, I like working, I like all of that sort of stuff. So I'll have plenty to keep myself busy, and I'll definitely be, my interactions with sport will be 100% from a point of enjoyment from now on.
A couple of triathlons then, fair place.
And I would say to you, Richie, finally, don't be surprised if you get a call from the Sunday game.
I echo those sentiments as well, Richie. Absolutely a pleasure talking to you, and so very well versed and knowledgeable, and a credit to you, and thanks for everything that you've given to the game of hurling. It's been brilliant.
Thanks very much.
Good words from us. Well done, Richie. So appreciate your time. You've been very good. Thank you so much. From all of us here on the Game on Sunday podcast, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again in the future.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.